On this 15th day of October 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. Text number 16. That's 516. Jnanena tutara jnanam.
Jnanena tutara jnanam.
Yesham nashitamatmanaha. Teshamaditya-bhajnanam Prakashyati-tatparam. Translation. When, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything, as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. Purport. Those who have forgotten Krishna must certainly be bewildered, but those who are in Krishna consciousness are not bewildered at all. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvam Jnana Plavena, Jnana Agni Savakarmani, and Nahi Jnanena Sadrisham. Knowledge is always highly esteemed, and what is that knowledge? Perfect knowledge is achieved when one surrenders unto Krishna, as is said in the 7th chapter, 19th verse. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavan mampapadide. After passing through many, many births, when one perfect in knowledge surrenders unto Krishna, or when one attains Krishna consciousness, then everything is revealed to him, as everything is revealed by the sun in the daytime. The living entity is bewildered in so many ways. For instance, when he unceremoniously thinks himself God, he actually falls into the last snare of nescience. If a living entity is God, then how can he become bewildered by nescience? Does God become bewildered by nescience? If so, then nescience, or Satan, is greater than God. Real knowledge can be obtained from a person who is in perfect Krishna consciousness. Therefore, one has to seek out such a bona fide spiritual master and, under him, learn what Krishna consciousness is. For Krishna consciousness will certainly drive away all nescience as the sun drives away darkness. Even though a person may be in full knowledge that he is not this body but is transcendental to the body, he still may not be able to discriminate between the soul and the supersoul. However, he can know everything well if he cares to take shelter of the perfect, bona fide, Krishna-conscious spiritual master. One can know God and one's relationship with God only when one actually meets a representative of God. A representative of God never claims that he is God, although he is paid all the respect ordinarily paid to God, because he has knowledge of God. One has to learn the distinction between God and the living entity. Lord Sri Krishna therefore stated in the second chapter, 2.12, that every living being is individual, and that the Lord is also individual. They were all individuals in the past, they are individuals at present, and they will continue to be individuals in the future, even after liberation. At night, we see everything as one in the darkness, but in the daytime, when the sun is up, we see everything in its real identity. Identity with individuality in spiritual life is real knowledge. Om jnana timarandasya jnanandana shalakya chakshu unmidatam mena tasmai shri gurave namah. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Parampara. So knowledge is compared to different things in the Bhagavad Gita. Here we see knowledge compared to the sun. Later in this chapter, we'll see knowledge compared to fire and also to a boat. Actually, maybe it was in the end of the fourth chapter. But knowledge is compared to a boat. Knowledge is compared to fire, knowledge is compared to the sun, and knowledge is also compared to a sword. And so knowledge is very valuable. It is a boat by which we can cross over the ocean of birth and death. It is the sun that enlightens us and gets us out of darkness. It is the fire that burns to ashes all sinful reactions. And it's at the end of the fourth chapter, because it says, with the sword of knowledge, cut off all your doubts that are keeping you from surrendering to me. So knowledge is a very valuable thing. And here, Krishna is comparing it to the sun. So in this material world, we're basically in darkness. We're in ignorance. Even just physically, this is a dark place. If there was no sun, then there would be no light in this world because it's completely covered by these coverings of the material energy. We understand that each universe is a space, a little space inside, relatively, half filled with water emanated from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and then covered with thick coverings of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, each 10 times bigger than the last. So where is there any space for light seeping in from the Brahmajyoti? It doesn't. So we need artificial light in the form of the sun and electricity and fire and all of these things. But as we know from the Shastra, Krishna's planet is self-effulgent, just as Krishna is described as self-effulgent. Everything in the spiritual world is effulgent. There's no need, as Krishna says in the 15th chapter, for any electricity, fire, sun, or moon. So we need knowledge, but we need real knowledge, knowledge that will actually enlighten us, notice the word enlighten, about who we are, who is God, who is the source of everything, what is this world, what is our relationship. And we also need knowledge about how we can realize all these things. Otherwise, it remains theoretical. In some contexts, knowledge is contrasted with jnana is contrasted with vigyan. Jnana is everything we can read in this book, right? But vigyan is actually experiencing it viscerally, directly. Prabhupada would say scientifically, meaning by direct perception. Remember at the beginning of the 9th chapter, Krishna says in the 2nd verse that Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam, Pavitram Idamutaram, Pratyakshavagamam Dhammam Susukam Kartamavya, that this knowledge of what I just explained is culminating in Krishna consciousness, is the king of knowledge, the king of secrets, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam, the most purifying knowledge, and it gives one direct perception of the self, Pratyakshavagamam. That's called Vigyan. Now, we can't begin to understand these things unless we come in contact with someone who is already in knowledge. That's why in the previous chapter, text 34, we had this key verse, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam. Is that word jnanam? Jnaninas tatvadarshina. That key word, tatvadarshi. Tatvadarshi means someone who's actually seen. It's not theoretical. Directly seen the truth of these things. Such a spiritual master can impart knowledge unto us. And how to get that knowledge? By surrender, service, and inquiry. The key element is that surrender. Because it's not, the knowledge is not only coming from without, it's also coming from within. We have to remember that this is entirely, at every step, a personal process. You know, it's a personal process. Meaning that whatever advancement we make, whatever enlightenment we make, is really given to us, ultimately, by Krishna. And he prescribes, one has to approach my servant, my pure servant, and surrender, serve, and inquire. No amount of speculation, no amount of investigation, no amount of yoga, austerities, none of these things will really qualify us to be enlightened. You see? And he's giving it from within also. He says in the 10th chapter, key verse, Tesham Satatu Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Tadami Buddhi Yogam Namyenam Amapayantitam. To those who are serving me with love, I give them the knowledge by which they can approach me further. With the shining lamp of knowledge, I destroy the darkness of ignorance in the heart. So this is the knowledge that Krishna is speaking about here. It destroys ignorance, and it lights up everything like the daytime. So that means that we're all walking around more or less in darkness. Now this can also be understood in terms of the modes of nature, because one of those modes is tamas, which means darkness. So the real insidious part of Maya, of the modes of nature, is that it makes you forget that you're in ignorance. You don't even know that you're ignorant. And you mean that you can have a PhD, You can be very expert in all kinds of philosophical or you know other kinds of subjects, but you're still in total ignorance of who you are and what your mission in life is and how to achieve it, which are the most important questions. This is the thing about these wonderful scripture or shastra that Srila Prabhupada has given us, is that each of them not only answers the questions, but teaches us which questions we should ask. We don't know. This is, you remember Sanatana Goswami, when he approaches Lord Chaitanya, he expresses that, I don't even know what proper questions to ask. You know, he does ask key questions, who am I, why am I suffering? But in a humble mood, you know, he says, but you need to show me, you know, what's the proper questions? Because otherwise, the questions are all based on matter. Prabhupada explains that nicely at the beginning of the second canto, where Sukadeva Goswami, he praises Maharaj Parikshit for his question at the end of the first canto. What is that question? What should one think about? What should one hear in chant? What should one do as death approaches? Remember, it's very dramatic. You know, both the Bhagavatam and the Gita are in a very dramatic, highly charged atmosphere, right? Bhagavad Gita is on a battlefield, and the whole Bhagavatam is spoken in 7 days by Sukadeva Goswami as Maharaj Parikshit is waiting for this predicted snake bird to bite him and end his life. So everything, every word counts, every second counts. So Maharaj Parikshit asks a question. You know, he doesn't ask, how can I avoid the snake bird? He's already resigned himself to that. He asks, what should one do as death approaches? How should one conduct oneself? How should one form one's consciousness? And so Sukadeva Goswami, he praises the question. He says, Vadiya Nishite Prashna Krito Loka Hitang Nipa Atmavit Samatak Pungsam Shota Vyadashi Yak Paraha. Very nice question. Vadiya Nishite Prashna. Such questions do good for all of humanity. Because when they're asked of the proper person and the answers are given and recorded, either actually recorded or, you know, recorded and then disseminated, they do good for all of humanity. Loka hitam, that's what hitam means, benefit. And all of the realized souls, they praise such questions. But on the other hand, this is how the shastra goes, this is by contrast. You see things by contrast. And so typically in these chapters, you'll find, and we just had an example, if you surrender to this knowledge, it'll be manifest. But the doubting soul, there's no hope, you know? So then immediately he goes into contrast. He says, Shrota vyadini rajanya nirang santi sahasacha apashyatam atmatattvam griheshu grihamedinam. On the other hand, those who have no inkling of atmatattva, who are simply materialistic, you know, householders or non-householders, they have millions of subjects for hearing. Millions of other questions. Prabhupada points out the birds, in the, you know, hopping around on the grass are asking the questions. Where's the worm? The stockbrokers are asking the question, what's going up, what's going down? Right? And you go to any college, there's a million questions. But where is the question that will do good for all of humanity? Where are they asking, what should one do as death approaches? Who is God? Who am I? What is this world? How can I know? How can I solve the problem of birth and death? So this is the key element is the direction of one's inquiry. And so we're given that here. Arjuna is asking these questions, and the Krishna is giving answers. And throughout the Bhagavatam, we know there's so many questions and answers. And all of them have to do with these essential subject matters. So this is we should aspire for this knowledge. Now, what's the relation between bhakti and jnana? You know, our acharyas teach us that bhakti is completely independent. It's not dependent on any knowledge that we may get. And here, knowledge is being praised. So how is that? Because this is the knowledge that attends to bhakti. Attends to bhakti. That is integrated within bhakti. In the second chapter, first canto, this wonderful section, he says, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Piyojita Janayat Yashu Vairagam Jnanam Chayarahoitagam. If one simply begins the process of bhakti, now this is part of it. You know, study of the shastra is part of bhakti. That's part of it, you know. But that's not all. It's not that just you buy a book or you get a book and you just read it and do nothing else. every line, every page, you find normative things, which means things to do and not to do. You can't read Prabhupada's books and not come, you know, very quickly to the point of, oh, you should do something. You know, you can read other philosophy books and it says, well, maybe it's like this, maybe it's like that. I remember when I was in college, you know, I spent about 6 months in the University of Chicago and about a year and a half in NYU, New York University. And when I went to NYU, I wanted to study philosophy. I wanted to find out especially what basis there was of ethics, of morality in the world. Because I was in the middle, middle of the Vietnam War, and it was very troubling to me, you know, that I was part of the country that was bombing this, you know, I felt completely that we were doing the wrong thing. So anyway, I studied the philosophy, and ironically, you know, this is almost funny, my teacher was an Indian guy. He was an Indian immigrant, from, you know, but he was completely westernized, and he was teaching us Plato, Socrates, Heidegger, you know, all these guys. That's what logical positivism and this and that. And I didn't get an inkling out of all of that, you know, of what I should do to transform my life and improve it. It was like a survey course of all these things that people have thought about over the years. There wasn't much religion that I remember, you know, it was all based on speculation. And it didn't help, you know. I wasn't hearing from a realized soul. I wasn't studying books of real knowledge. I was just studying somebody's, the main speculators in the last 2,000 years. Now, it's not that they were completely off. They all had, you know, they had some inkling of it. That's the way Maya works. It's like the real thing, right? So even Plato, he had some idea, you know, that there's absolute beauty somewhere. There's absolute, you know, virtue. And in whatever we see of it in this world, that we take part of it. There's Plato's cave, which is a great analogy. You know, where you have people growing up and being chained to this, you know, cave, and all they see is the shadows. You know, and then one guy breaks out, and he gets outside, and he sees the light. He can hardly see because it's so dark. Light, you know, and finally he comes back. He tries to tell him, "No, there's a whole world out there. It's not just this cave." And they don't want to hear it. You know. Now, that's, you know, when you know Krishna consciousness, whoa, that's just like Maya and the, you know, the illusions. But if you don't know about Krishna, how far can you get with that? You know what I mean? In other words, there's little parts of it. In Christianity, we find, you know, love thy God with all thy heart, all thy mind, fine. But on that basis alone, are you going to develop real love for Krishna? There are some advanced saints in the Christian history, but by and large, you're adrift. You know, unless you have a systematic a body of knowledge that has been given, handed down by a real parampara, and that is tried and true to give you the result of purification. So anyway, this you know, what Krishna is praising here, this knowledge, we should come out of the darkness and go to the light. Tamasi ma jyotirgama. This is like a very famous phrase in India. Tamasi ma jyotirgama. Don't stay in the darkness. Go to the light. Don't stay in the world of birth of death. Come to the amrita, right? And what is the other one? Tamasi ma jyotirgama. Asato ma sadgamaya. You know, don't stay in the asat, the world of temporary things. Come to the eternal world. So it's a call to us. It's an injunction. You know, it's not just some philosophical, it's not just a study of Hindu culture. You know, it's like that famous pastime where Prabhupada met someone who had read the Bhagavad Gita, and then the question was, oh, what are you going to do about it? You know, and it was a shock to him. Oh, do anything. I just read the book. It's an interesting book. It added to my general knowledge of Eastern thought, you know. No. It's a challenge, Krishna's saying. Either you're going to surrender or you stay unsurrendered. And if you don't surrender to Krishna, then you stay in ignorance and you suffer. That's just the way it is. You know, it's a very stark reality, actually, ultimately. I want to run through this purport and see some points probably made. So, Text 16. Okay, so Prabhupada gives a few phrases about how the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvam, Jnana, Plavane, that's the boat analogy. Jnanagni, that's the fire analogy, burns when it's karma. Nahi Jnani na Sadrasham, there's nothing as wonderful and pure as knowledge. Okay. Then unless one surrenders to Krishna, one is not truly in knowledge. Bahunam janmanaman te jnanaban mapapadide. Because he understands that Krishna is everything. What more is there to know? You know, that Krishna is everything. So if you don't know Krishna, then you really can't understand this world. Okay. He gives another swipe at Mayavad. One can think that he's God, which is part of nescience. All right. And the old argument that how can we be God, since we're obviously in ignorance now, that means that ignorance has covered God. But it can't. You know, then Maya is God. God or Absolute has to be the most powerful. Can never be covered. That's what achyuta really means. Cannot fall down under the influence of illusion. That's the name for Krishna. Okay, one has to come in touch with the spiritual master and get the mercy of Krishna. Lord Brahma himself, this is another verse Prabhupada would always quote, Atapi te deva padam vajadvaya prasada lesha anugrihita eva hi janat vitattvam bhagavan mahimno nachanya eko pichadam vichinam. So this is Lord Brahma himself speaking. Lord Brahma is the wisest person in the universe. He's so intelligent, he has four heads. Right? He's the one who taught Narada. He's the one, you know, he's the repository of the Vedas. And yet he himself, as a pastime, became bewildered by Krishna. In this, and these are his prayers after realizing that, yes, it's true that this little five-year-old boy carrying the flute and a horn and a little yogurt and fruit in his hand is actually my master, my father. He's actually the source of everything. He's actually God. It's you know, it's kind of cognitive dissonance, but it's true. And so he offers these wonderful prayers in chapter 14 and 10th canto. And this is one of the prayers Prabhupada would always quote. And what he says there is that only if someone gets even a slight bit of your mercy can he understand your glories in truth. Bhagavan Mahimno. Not others who may speculate for millions of years. Chidam vichinvam. Chidam means for a long time. So in other words, Krishna reveals himself to those who have devotion to him. He doesn't reveal himself, and therefore they stay in darkness, to those who, no matter how big their brains are or how many brains they have, do not surrender. So ultimately, gyan follows bhakti, you see. Gyan comes with bhakti. But still, we should make the effort to understand all these things as part of bhakti. Krishna wants us to hear the Bhagavad Gita. He wants us to discuss and understand, apply our intelligence. But ultimately, it's up to Krishna. He will enlighten us from within if he sees our sincerity. Okay, any discussion on this verse? Move into the sun. One final verse, can't resist. Krishna Surya Sama Mayavaya Andhakar Yahan Krishna Tahanahi Maya Adhikar. This is the little motto for Bhagavad Gita since 1944, coming up on 70 years. Krishna, this is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says to Sanatana, I believe, Krishna is like the sun, Maya is like deep darkness. Wherever Krishna is, nescience cannot stand. So we don't have to worry, you know, about being in darkness. If we stay Krishna conscious, then we'll be in the sunshine and we'll be saved. Text 17. Tad buddhiyas tad atmanas. Tannishtas tad parayana. Gacchant apunuravrittim. Jnana nirdhuta kalmashah. When one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. Okay. Yeah. Purport. The Supreme Transcendental Truth is Lord Krishna. The whole Bhagavad Gita centers around the declaration that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the version of all Vedic literatures. Paratattva means the supreme reality, who is understood by the knowers of the Supreme as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of God, it is the last word in the Absolute. There is nothing more than that. The Lord says, Mattat patatarang nanyat kincharasti dhanandaya. Impersonal Brahman is also supported by Krishna, Brahmanohi pratishtaham. Therefore, in all ways, Krishna is the Supreme Reality. One whose mind, intelligence, faith, and refuge are always in Krishna, or in other words, one who is fully in Krishna consciousness, is undoubtedly washed clean of all misgivings and is in perfect knowledge in everything concerning transcendence. A Krishna conscious person can thoroughly understand that there is duality, simultaneous identity and individuality in Krishna. And equipped with such transcendental knowledge, one can make steady progress on the path of liberation. So at the end of the of text 16, Krishna says, Tat Param. He uses that word Param, and that the prophet says is Krishna consciousness. So that is what's being referred to in the beginning of text 17, Tat Buddhiyas. Those in the Supreme, namely in the Param, in the Param Brahma in Krishna. So the four things, the intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge. So clearly, that's, if all of those things are directed toward Krishna, then we're safe. One becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and proceeds straight on the path of liberation. Jnana nirdhuta kalmasha. So here the jnana is said to be a cleansing agent. Now, you know, this word jnana has many ramifications. I always like to refer to chapter 13, where Arjuna said, well, what is that jnana? You know, what is jnana and what is the object of jnana? What does he say? Purushak prakate purush. He wants to know what is the Purusha and what is the Prakriti. Prakritim Purusham Chaiva, Chaitram Chaitra Gimevacha, Etad Vedidamichami, Jnanam, Gayam Chikeshava. He has six questions. What is Prakriti, this world? Who is the Purusha, the living entity trying to act as the enjoyer? And they're designated as Purusha here, even though constitutionally we know that we're also Prakriti. But the distinction is being made. And what is the Chaitra and Chaitra Gya? Chaitra being the body, Chaitra being gya, the knower of the body, is the soul. And then what is knowledge and gyam, the goal of knowledge? And when Krishna systematically answers these, and when he comes to knowledge, he has a series of 20 things that he describes between text 8 and 11. 8 and 12, I'm sorry. And here you have knowledge taking into account as part of that knowledge, humility, lack of hypocrisy, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity. You see? So where do you find anything like that in Berkeley University? They don't care if you're humble. They just want to know how you do on the test. First of all, if you pay your tuition. And then, you know, if you can pass the test. Right? So here is a whole character issue. You see? In other words, you may know all 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita, but if you don't worship the Acharya, which is one of them, if you're not clean, if you're not non-violent, then you're not in knowledge. Krishna says anything other than this is ignorance. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever they may be is ignorance. And of course, the most essential of these is Mai Chananya Yogena Bhaktidava Vicharani. To be unflinching, to practice unflinching devotional service to me. That's part of knowledge. So you see how knowledge is not so simple. It's not just knowing any facts and figures or knowing any, you know, even the verses of Bhagavad Gita. It's a transformation of one's character. And that's a very important part of it. So that's why we have, you know, it's so deep here, intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge. One has to basically take shelter of Krishna. And then what's the result? Apunar avritim. You're no longer covered. Never again will you be covered by ignorance. Krishna says that in the fourth chapter. You know, after the famous verse that I quoted about the guru, he says, and knowing this, you will never again fall into illusion. If you really achieve this knowledge from the guru, you know, and he imparts it, and you act on it, and you imbibe it, then you'll remain enlightened. The same thing is said here. Gacchanti apunar avritim means you never covered again, and you'll be cleansed of the misgivings, of sinful reactions, of doubts, of all these things by this knowledge. So what a wonderful thing this is. And this is the gift. This is the gift of the great acharyas. They give us that that knowledge. They act like channels. They used to use that all the time. I'm channeling so-and-so. So we're really into that. We're totally into that. We may not call it that, but that's the qualification of a genuine spiritual master, is that he channels Krishna perfectly. Now, it may be in a different language, right? That's the whole thing. Well, here it's English, so we can understand it. And it may be, customized for time and place and circumstance and candidate, but it's the same message, unadulterated, by someone who has realized the message. And so that kind of knowledge has this wonderful effect. But we have to be serious about cultivating it. And that means becoming practice. It means practicing. The chanting, the hearing, the lifestyle. And then it kind of, it awakens in the heart. And one's whole understanding of oneself, the world, relationships, changes. If one is in that knowledge. That's, the value of it. Okay. And one thing about this purport, Prabhupada mentions here, that the whole Bhagavad Gita centers around the declaration that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The whole Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, all of Vaishnavism itself, centers on that, is based on that. That's why in the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, that verse in the third chapter, Ete Changsa Kala Pungsa Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. It's like said by Jiva Goswami to be the most essential verse. What it means is, having listed all of these other avatars, he goes through the Dasha avatars and even others who were not really even Vishnu Tattva. He mentions Nisringa, he mentions Varaha, he mentions Matsya, Lord Ram, he even mentions Krishna and Balaram in there, and Kalki, Buddha. These are all mentioned in one verse after another, listing different main avatars of Krishna. But then at the end, he has this verse. Say, all of them, ete, cha angsha kala pungsa, they are either plenary or partial expansions of Krishna. Meaning that they may be complete, they may have be Vishnu Tattva, like Ramchandra. Ramchandra and Krishna are not different. Same personality. But Lord Ramchandra does not manifest all of the opulences of God 100% like Krishna does. Little less, And same thing for Lord Nisringa and Matsya. They're all Krishna, But they don't manifest all of Krishna's power. So that's why he says all of them are either partial or plenary expansions of Krishna. But Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. I remember when we used to get letters or see letters that Prabhupada would send, and devotees would pick up on this, and when they sent, there was no email back in the 70s, And you all, write letters, And so that would be the phrase at the top, very top. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. It's so important. Krishna is God, Most people don't accept that. And we may not accept it either fully as we should. But the idea is that that's the key element. Once that's clear, everything else flows. And Krishna says in so many places, there's nothing superior to me. That means none of the other avatars, what to speak of the Brahma Jyoti, what to speak of anything material. Nothing. Krishna is supreme. Then Bhagavad Gita makes complete sense. So that's real knowledge, when you have full faith in that. That's why I said Buddha Nishta. You have Nishtas. You're fully convinced of that. Then you can gacchanti, go nicely to the position where you're never covered again. Text 18. Now this is a famous verse. Vidyavaniya sampanne brahmane gavihastini shuni chaiva shvapake cha pandita samadarshinaha. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog-eater, or an outcast. Purport. A Krishna conscious person does not make any distinction between species or castes. The Brahmin and the outcast may be different from the social point of view, or a dog, a cow, and an elephant may be different from the point of view of species, but these differences of body are meaningless from the viewpoint of a learned transcendentalist. This is due to their relationship to the Supreme. For the Supreme Lord, by his plenary portion as the Paramatma, is present in everyone's heart. Such an understanding of the Supreme is real knowledge. As far as the bodies are concerned in different castes or different species of life, the Lord is equally kind to everyone because he treats every living being as a friend, yet maintains himself as the Paramatma regardless of the circumstances of the living entities. The Lord as Paramatma is present both in the outcast and in the Brahman, although the body of a Brahman and that of an outcast are not the same. The bodies are material productions of different modes of material nature, but the soul and the supersoul within the body are of the same spiritual quality. The similarity in the quality of the soul and the supersoul, however, does not make them equal in quantity, for the individual soul is present only in that particular body, whereas the Paramatma is present in each and every body. A Krishna conscious person has full knowledge of this, and therefore he is truly learned and has equal vision. The similar characteristics of the soul and supersoul are that they are both conscious, eternal, and blissful. But the difference is that the individual soul is conscious within the limited jurisdiction of the body, whereas the supersoul is conscious of all bodies. The supersoul is present in all bodies without distinction. So this is we see according to our knowledge. We see according to our state of mind. We see according to the mode of nature we're in. Not everyone sees the same. I always give the same example. You've heard it a million times. I've heard these classes. Someone who is school. I remember when I was in college, way back in the Pleistocene era. I studied, believe it or not, art appreciation, like a course in that at the University of Chicago. Because I had come from New York, I was familiar with some of the art in the the museums there. So okay, fine art. So I learned a little bit about, why they were painting all of these religious symbols, to learn, find these things and the color, the composition, a little bit about that, So that means that I was then seeing the art in a different way, isn't it? Because I could understand the meaning. Same thing with music. If you understand, Beethoven and, how music is put, and you go to a concert, you appreciate it more. Or an Indian concert, the ragas, how they're working, and why this raga, this time of day, this time of year, this mood is being... You experience things according to your knowledge base, So now he's speaking, how a pundits see. This is what someone who has knowledge. He's speaking about... First of all, they see everyone equally. In the sense that they see the spirit everywhere and they see the super soul in everyone. So they don't relate only on the basis of the external body. Now you have to understand how this works. It's not that someone who's a pundit will go into the forest and deal with a lion the same way they're going to deal with a Vaishnava, with another person. You have to deal with other beings according to where they're at. But you see the equality of everyone. And where possible, you deal with them in such a way on that spiritual level. That's why devotees, wouldn't hurt a fly, if possible. You try to avoid causing any damage, right? Even we understand the plants, they can hear. They can respond to sound. It's been proven. Prabhupada's quantum voting, Jagadish Chandra Bose, that he was the first one to prove that plants have consciousness. They respond to sound. And I remember reading about 20 years ago the book, The Secret Life of Plants. I don't know if that's still current. You remember it? Yeah. If you scream at your house plant, it'll shrivel up. Whereas if you sing to it, I have this house plant, it's right near where I play Prabhupada bhajans and everything. I have had it for 17 years. No problem. It flourishes like anything. I have to keep clipping it. I do water it regularly. But the point is that plants... So therefore, what do devotees do? Well, of course, we worship Tulsi. That goes without question. But also, you know, we're benefiting. This is a very fortunate little, you know, foliage around here. They get offered to Krishna. They hear the devotees chanting their rounds, you know. So that's spiritual vision. What to speak of, you know, how you deal with other Vaishnavas. I mean, that's critical to your own, you know, bhakti. But the vision, the sight is that everybody's a soul. Everybody is spiritual. And everybody is laboring under their karma and under the modes of nature. You see that reality too, you know. This is the like unified vision. That's why it says Samadarshana, the transcendental vision. Is it chapter 17? 14 or 17? Where he's talking about the modes of nature. He talks about how you see that vision by which you separate, you know. This whole, that's Rajasic. That's the mode of passion. You know, what do we have today? That's whatever, you know, the immigrants, keep them out. The Mexicans, you know, take our jobs, you know. And this whole country was built on that. Yes, you know, send me your immigrants, it says. And who is it? The, you know, yearning to breathe free, or unfortunate. Okay, Ellis Island, they came through. But what happened? Every wave they came through, they were discriminated. Oh, they're the Irish, they're the Germans, they're the Jews. Right? That's called Rajasic thinking. The place where I am born is worshipable, right? And it's encouraged everywhere. You know, you live in a certain city, you root for that team. You know, they break into fights. You're rooting for the other team. It's insane. That's mode of ignorance. But what does the devotee say? Oh, he says, oh, this is modes of nature working. Everyone's moving through their karma. The souls are simply moving in the body. And where possible, you try to awaken the soul to Krishna consciousness for their eternal benefit. You see, this is what he's talking about. So Vidya Vinaya Sampane. He's seeing the Brahman, the cow, the dog ate the elephant. He sees the sameness, and the spiritual sameness. But he's not a fool, or he or she's not a fool, and doesn't see the differences. And you have to deal according to the state that they're in. But still, it's a Samadarshana. This is the vision of the transcendental vision. All right, one more. Ihaivataya Chitak Sargo. Yesham sam yestitam manaha nirdosham hi samam brahma tasmam brahma nitestitaha. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. Purport. Equanimity of mind, as mentioned above, is the sign of self-realization. Those who have actually attained to such a stage should be considered to have conquered material conditions, specifically birth and death. As long as one identifies with this body, he is considered a conditioned soul. But as soon as he is elevated to the stage of equanimity through realization of self, he is liberated from conditional life. In other words, he is no longer subject to taking birth in the material world, but can enter into the spiritual sky after his death. The Lord is flawless because he is without attraction or hatred. Similarly, when a living entity is without attraction or hatred, he also becomes flawless and eligible to enter into the spiritual sky. Such persons are to be considered already liberated, and their symptoms are described below. So, jitaha, sargo, means to conquer creation, birth and death. One thing that's interesting, you know, Krishna throughout the Bhagavad Gita here and in the sixth chapter, this recalls to mind, coming to this point where you're able to remain equipoised even as the material energy is attacking you, so to speak, even in the greatest difficulty, he says in the next chapter six. We're kind of moving into six now. You remain undisturbed, you know. So this is a state that one has to acquire. In other words, to train the mind, so that you can remain fixed, focused on Krishna and Krishna consciousness, despite what's ever happening externally. Because ultimately, the body is going to be very disturbed at the time of death, right? And normally, the mind is responding so much to the impulses from the body. You know, the mind also has its own memories and things that go out to the senses, and we do things. It's a reciprocal thing. But as soon as the body is a little bit in pain, the mind gets disturbed, wants to try to fix that. Right? This is a normal state of being. But in Krishna consciousness, you have to remain fixed, you know, at the time of death, despite the greatest difficulty in the body. That's the whole idea. We're trying to train for that point. So, you know, becoming fixed in this this knowledge means to be fixed in Brahma, you know, on the Brahma Bhuta platform. It's a platform you have to stay on. It's not easy to get on that platform or stay on it. It means that one has to be able to focus the mind and remain absorbed despite whatever is going on externally in every circumstance. That was Arjuna's problem. He was greatly disturbed by the prospect of killing his relatives. And he couldn't remain fixed until he heard the Bhagavad Gita, and then he was completely fixed. So that's what he established in the same as equanimity, conquered the condition of birth and death, you see. So then, now there's a certain theme here. You know, so many of the Bhagavad Gita, you see that now he's going to speak about Brahman. And we know the Supreme Brahman is Krishna. So there's some really nice verses coming up. 21 and 22 are two of my favorite verses in the chapter. But here it's a question of conquering. It means there's a battle. You know, the senses and mind are now trying to go one way, but you as a soul have to, you know, strengthen your intelligence so you can control that lower self. So therefore, you know, he says, I've conquered. You conquer birth and death by becoming situated, by the mind situated on this Brahman platform. So that's what Krishna consciousness is. And we have a great tool to do that, you know, the chanting. The chanting is this great opportunity in this age especially to conquer the mind and to pacify it and make it completely satisfied in Krishna, you know. And really come to this, all these things that Krishna is talking about, one can experience through the process of bhakti yoga centered on the chanting. Okay, we're getting any questions or comments on these passages? Very nice. I think we'll leave it at that for now. We still have one more day tomorrow to give class, and we can deal with these two favorite verses here, 21-22. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.